WVW Broadcast Network and The New American are pleased to present The New American Television. This program is dedicated to bringing you the truth behind the news.
Welcome to The New American TV, where we bring you the truth behind the news. Today's Thursday, June 1st, and I'm your host, Paul Dragoon. After a lot of debate and fiery opposition from Freedom Caucus Republicans, the House passed a debt ceiling bill last night. More than 70 Republicans voted against the compromise bill, and more Democrats voted for it than Republicans. The final vote was 314 to 117, 149 Republicans joining 165 Democrats. Here is House Speaker Kevin McCarthy taking a victory lap.
Because of the vote we took tonight, the largest rescissions in American history. All the COVID money, the billions of dollars sitting out there that they said they would never bring back. You know what? To the taxpayer, to you hardworking Americans, we stood for you. We brought that money back. For those who are afraid that they're going to get audited because the president wants to have 87,000 new IRS agents, right now he has zero. We took every single dollar they were going to hire somebody this year away. And I promise you, I'll be back next year and next year and next year. Because I believe government should be here to help you, not go after you.
As the bill heads to the Senate, Senator Rand Paul says that he'll force votes on cutting federal spending by 2% each of the next 2 years. This will include tax cuts in Social Security and Medicare. The Kentucky senator is concerned that the current bill only covers non-military discretionary spending, a mere 17% of the total federal budget. Rand Paul noted that so-called mandatory spending is the real driver of the federal debt, since it's more than half of total federal spending and it increases by about 5% each year.
I think the deal we have before us isn't conservative. I don't think it cuts any spending. Currently, we're borrowing about $2 million every minute. As we speak, $2 million every minute is being borrowed, over $1 trillion a year. We've got to do something dramatic. And so I think we have to look at the whole budget. And so I'll be a no on this, but I will be introducing a conservative alternative that would actually reduce spending each year, leading to a balanced budget within 5 years.
You have an amendment with this proposal you've been making for a balanced budget within 5 years and some much larger scale caps on not just discretionary spending, but you'd cap Social Security and Medicare, which is a controversial proposal.
Right. Not necessarily Social Security. What's on budget, it includes Medicare, military, and everything. But if you exclude the mandatory, which is Medicare spending, from this, it takes away about two-thirds of the spending. And that's why when McCarthy and Biden made a deal, they made it on this much spending, so it really doesn't have any impact as to our overall problem with the debt. You have to look at all of it. But when you say, oh, you're going to cut Medicare, people will get frightened, oh, I'll have less Medicare. There's actually so much administrative bureaucracy and bloat in Medicare that cutting a point or two from the overall budget could be done without affecting anybody's benefits.
The real drama will begin in October when Congress starts taking up appropriations for the next fiscal year. At that time, we'll find out whether this lukewarm debt limit agreement is truly the beginning of meaningful spending cuts or not. Make sure to tune in to tomorrow's episode as we take a deep look at America's addiction to debt. And we have new developments in the other major story in Washington. The House is preparing to hold FBI Director Christopher Wray in contempt of Congress. Wray has refused to comply with the House Oversight Committee subpoena of a document that allegedly shows how foreign powers bribed the Bidens in a pay-to-play scheme orchestrated when Joe was vice president. Last night, Congressman and Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer put out some startling revelations about the document. Here he is on Fox News discussing an offer from the FBI director to look at the document in private.
He offered us the opportunity to come look at it in a private shift, but he was going to redact it. My experience with getting documents from the FBI when they're redacted, it's all black lines. They don't show anything. But I'm going to say on this show what we told Director Wray, what Senator Grassley told Director Wray. He and I have already seen the 1023 form. We knew what was in the 1023 form. Until we told Director Wray that, he never even admitted that the form existed. So the level of confidence that we have with Director Wray only went down. It only declined throughout the conversation. So we will go there and look at the redacted document, but we know what's in the document. And the reason we find this allegation credible, not only because of the credibility of the whistleblower, but because we've seen a pattern of Joe Biden, when he was vice president, leaving a country after he talks about foreign aid and foreign policy, and his family members start receiving payments from that company through shell companies that are then laundered down to Biden family members. So there is a pattern of behavior. And we saw that in Romania. We've seen that in China. We've seen that in other countries that would suggest that this allegation has merit.
Well, how about that? Comer and Senator Grassley have already seen the unredacted 1023 document, so they know what's in it. And they expect that if the FBI ever grants them official access, it will be too redacted to incriminate the Bidens. Congress has many options since Comer and others have actually seen the document and presumably know who the whistleblower is. In addition to holding Ray in contempt, they can describe what's in the document on record, and they can ask the whistleblower to testify. Like the Clintons, the Bidens will likely escape justice for their many crimes as D.C. insiders. But at least the public will have a fuller understanding on how corrupt the Biden family is. Join me to discuss today's stories is Steve Bonta, executive senior editor of The New American Magazine. Steve, you dug up that that clip there. And when I saw it, I was pretty floored at what Comer said.
Well, he's kind of casual. It's not clear when they, you know, how long ago they got to see this document or under what circumstances, whether they have a, you know, a copy that was smuggled out of the FBI or something like that. But at this point, you almost, one supposes that to get anything, any meaningful information, you also almost have to resort to cloak and dagger level subterfuge in D.C. because of this, you know, this growing tendency to close ranks around each other. I mean, you can't, for example, I mean, if any people are actually indicted and brought to trial, as we saw with the two people, the three people that were indicted brought to trial pursuant the Durham investigation, two of the three were completely, you know, exonerated, so to speak. But well, were found not guilty by a D.C. jury. Okay, and that's the key, because a jury in the District of Columbia is going to be made up of the these same parasitic cretins that work for the government, whose sole interest and whose political inclination is always to close ranks around the state that supports them.
It's a built-in apparatus of corruption.
Yeah, you think that it almost ought to be a law that D.C. cannot try any of its own within the confines of the Beltway. You know, they have to try them in, I don't know, Texas or something like that. If you did that, things would probably change in a hurry. But all of these people know, from Ray on down, that they can do at this point pretty much anything they want because the deep state's influence is so broad and so deep and with very few exceptions has ensnared almost everyone living and working in the D.C. area that they don't fear the court system anymore.
Yeah.
They don't fear the judges. They certainly don't fear the prosecutors, whom they know will treat them with kid gloves. Okay, and they don't fear the grand juries and the actual impaneled juries they're going to acquit their own 9 out of 10 times.
This is so illustrative of how the deep state is in charge, as you mentioned. I guess we shouldn't expect much, like we said, huh?
Well, as I say, I mean, absent major reforms, I mean, the whole issue with D.C. is that although it has not yet been, a major agenda item of the radical left is to transform the District of Columbia into a state. The full disclosure, I was born in the District of Columbia, so I like to tell people I'm a U.S. citizen, but I was not born in the United States, which used to be technically true. I mean, the founders created this small, district to serve as a capital. There was a reason they didn't make it a state or that they didn't make it a city within one of the major states like Pennsylvania or New York or something like that. It was sort of its own entity, but so being it lacked actual power in Congress because people in D.C., if you go to D.C., you constantly see bumper stickers, you know, the effect, you know, we who live here, taxation without representation because they don't have any representation in Congress.
Yeah.
Right. They don't, they're representatives don't have any votes in Congress. And they're all torqued about that because they think, you know, we should have this thing. Well, the thing is, if you live in D.C., it's different. Okay, if D.C. were ever to acquire its own senators and become a state, it would become a state like no other. It would have absolute dominion. It would completely wreck the entire Wow. federal system. Okay, so they haven't accomplished that extreme objective, but what they have accomplished is already this sort of lawless or law unto itself type of situation where they have their own mayors, their everything else. It's more or less self-contained, and for the most part, they get away with thumbing their nose at the rest of the country.
Yeah.
Because again, they have their own internal justice system, their own their own federal court and everything else, and it's all made up of themselves. And if this were, it's bad enough when you have a blue state like New York,
yeah.
where you can never get any what's going on in Manhattan right now with this district attorney run amok. But it's much worse
in DC,
when it's the actual seat of the federal government that enjoys this sort of immunity.
Yeah.
From outside interference.
What did you think of that? I don't know if it's quite the revelation, but I found it interesting that, how Comer mentioned that wherever Biden went, all of a sudden his family got rich. And I guess he was implying that there was a connection, funneling money to his family from whether it be Romania mentioned, China, whatnot.
Well, that of course is what he's referring to.
That's how it works, huh?
Sure. Well, that's he's referring to. We covered this a couple of weeks ago in the program when all that testimony came out,
yeah.
in which we learned exactly how it worked. And the beauty of it is that it's very this type of corruption is very, very hard to prosecute. And the Bidens and all of these experienced insiders know this.
They all probably do it, right?
Well, I don't know about all of them, but a large proportion of them do it. And the ones that do it, you can always identify the ones that do it. Those are the ones that are untouchable. No matter what they do, no matter what outrages they perpetrate, including things that clearly are, prosecutable crimes, like, acid washing the hard drive of a computer that's been subpoenaed by Congress, which is what Hillary Clinton did, among many other things. And yet somehow they never seem to come. There's no accounting. They never get... indicted, let alone yeah. prosecuted or imprisoned or made. And that's usually a pretty good indication that they are bona fide insiders, that they are shamelessly corrupt, that they have all their allies and partners in crime all around the world.
Yeah.
In places like Romania and the Ukraine and Beijing and everything else,
Is that part of the currency that comes with being an insider or a lawmaker? It's not just the salary you get, it seems like they all know that when you get in, there's a whole lot of money to be made on by influence.
Well, these are amoral people who don't believe in any such thing as objective right and wrong. And so if they can craft a system in which they're never held accountable for any wrongdoing, that sort of reinforces their own delusion
yeah.
of a godless, amoral, lawless universe.
Because that's what
most of them believe in, if I can use that term. So it's normal that they would, that they would try to create a system, a state within a state, where they enjoy that same impunity.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve. Stay tuned, folks, because after this, we'll look at the latest in the Texas Attorney General's impeachment battle and the property rights war raging in South Dakota. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Here at The New American, we are excited to cover the World Council on Health's The Better Way Conference in Bath, UK. Today's senior editor, Veronica Karolinko, will be there reporting live, and she'll be hosting two panel discussions. Please visit betterwayconference.org and get your tickets. You don't want to miss this. Now to the rest of our stories. After his impeachment, six top employees in the Texas Attorney General's office have taken a leave of absence to help defend Ken Paxton. They include Solicitor General and top appellate lawyer Judd Stone, Assistant Solicitors General Joseph N. Mazzara and Caitlin Jackson, Chief of the General Litigation Division Chris Hilton, Senior Attorney Allison Collins, and Executive Assistant Jordan Askew. This was certainly good news for Paxton. Last Saturday, the Republican-led Texas House of Representatives voted to impeach Paxton by a lopsided vote of 121 to 23. The House approved 20 articles of impeachment on allegations including disregard of official duty, misapplication of public resources, bribery, obstruction of justice, and abuse of public trust. AG Ken Paxton is now temporarily suspended from performing his duties while waiting trial by the state Senate. He incurred the wrath of national neocon Republican establishment going back at least to 2020 when he filed a lawsuit alleging unconstitutional voting irregularities in four battleground states that Donald Trump lost, a case the Supreme Court declined to hear. But he's also invited the wrath of establishment Texas Republicans, which he said have more in common with Democrats than real Republicans. Here he is explaining to Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz on Newsmax why they're after him.
What have you done to anger these establishment liberal Republicans?
Look, I've angered ever since I was in the Texas House. I ended up running against Joe Strauss, who was a Republican speaker. And, you know, when you expose what these liberal Republicans do, which is basically cut deals with liberal Democrats, they get really angry. The last thing they want is somebody around like me who exposes what they do. And I've done that with Phelan. They tried to sneak through legislation 2 years ago where they were reducing the penalty for illegal voting, where I would now have to prove that they knew the law when they did it, which meant no prosecutions. We caught them. We exposed it. Those are the types of things that Phelan finds infuriating. And unfortunately for him, we caught him and we exposed it despite the fact that he's a Republican.
In a statement released shortly after the vote, Paxton called the impeachment a politically motivated sham. Here he is with more on that.
We have lots of information that would change the results of their investigation. They have refused to let us testify. They have refused to let us give them information. They have refused to allow us to correct things that even they know are wrong. And that's the process we're in. They want this done because the voters, in their opinion, weren't smart enough to get it right, and they're going to fix it.
Paxton said he looks forward to a quick resolution in the Texas Senate where he has full confidence the process will be fair and just. The Senate announced Monday that the trial will start no later than August 28. President Donald Trump added his 2 cents on the ordeal. On Saturday, he posted on his Truth Social platform, quote, "The Rhino Speaker of the House of Texas, Dade Phelan, who is barely a Republican at all and failed to test on voter integrity, wants to impeach one of the most hardworking and effective attorney generals in the United States, Ken Paxton," end quote. And farmers in South Dakota are being intimidated by a private company that wants to use eminent domain to confiscate valuable farmland in order to run carbon capture pipelines through it. Summit Carbon Solutions requested a restraining order against Brown County farmer Jared Bossley. The company claims he threatened to kill representatives who showed up unannounced to survey his property, a farm that has been in his family for 4 generations. He told the New American that when they arrived, he was about 12 miles away working in a field. His wife was home recovering from surgery and was taking a shower when the Summit surveyors knocked at the door. They entered the house and found no one there. Then they went to an outbuilding and one of them walked in it. What you're watching is footage from one of Bossley's security cameras. Next, the Summit staff walked out onto Bossley's property and started setting up a tripod. By that time, Mrs. Bossley, with Jared on the phone, told them to leave. Jared said that the sheriff should be present if the company wanted access to his land. So the surveyors left. His wife called Jared back later that day to say a detective had just left the farm. Summit had reported Bossley for threatening to kill the surveyors. They also charged him with contempt of court for interfering with their survey activities. Bossley faced off in a county court with the company on Wednesday, and the judge ruled in his favor, but he warned other farmers not to interfere with surveyors, threatening sanctions if they do. Another farmer who attended the meeting told the New American that the judge also refused to hear any evidence against Summit. He complained that they appear to get away with their lies. Bossley is one of more than 80 landowners in South Dakota facing eminent domain lawsuits from Summit. In April, Fifth Circuit Judge Richard Summers granted the company's motion to conduct surveys of all land along their planned pipeline corridor, even private property. Farmers who originally declined to sign easement agreements are now forced to stand by as the company maps and drills on their land. Another Brown County farmer, Freddie Robinson, spoke before last week's county commission meeting about his safety concerns at the hands of Summit surveyors. Let's listen to part of his testimony.
Why do they have armed people standing in the middle of the road with guns so people can't go on their own property? I served 32 years in foreign countries, so that would not happen in America. I understand that when a car comes down the road, this bunch of mafia or whatever they are with guns unsnap their guns and put their hands on their guns. This is America. That crap should not be happening here. It's almost like we're turning into a communist country.
Carbon capture is a process that traps carbon dioxide produced by ethanol plants and pipes it to remote locations for underground storage. Two companies are planning pipelines through South Dakota's Corn Belt. Summit Carbon Solutions wants to build a Midwest Carbon Express, and Navigator CO2 Ventures is proposing the Heartland Greenway. These companies are for-profit enterprises that also stand to gain a federal tax credit of $50 per ton of CO2 sequestered. Navigator alone is looking at a $750 million tax credit for the 15 million tons of CO2 it plans to transport. The federal government alleges that capturing the CO2 is necessary to stop catastrophic man-made climate change. Farmers like Bosley and Robinson see through that smokescreen and call it what it is, one of the largest private land grab schemes in American history. Steve, I'd say that's a pretty good description, pretty accurate. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are that, you know, for a long time, I guess a lot of Americans have regarded the global radical environmentalist movement that, you know, really kind of came of age with the Rio Summit 30 some years ago.
Early 1992.
Right. As sort of a sideshow. And now they're seeing that it's not funny. It's not a joke. These people are deadly earnest, and they have no respect for private property. Now, I mean, eminent domain is something that is constitutional. It's an attempt, a very old attempt to resolve the issues between needs in the commons, like building roads and things of this sort, and, of course, private property ownership. It's often used as a refutation of libertarians. Well, you know, if you don't have some sort of government way to compel people, you know, to open up their property, who will build the roads, this type of thing? Well, I don't want to get into that. But this is clearly, I mean, roads and bridges are one thing. This is clearly a project motivated. I mean, this is, if this were a natural gas pipeline or an oil pipeline or something that demonstrably provides a public good, i.e. energy, then we would have something to talk about. But yeah, in this case, what this is doing, it's not, they're not, what they're setting up a pipeline for the reverse purpose of what pipelines are normally designed to do. So instead of providing energy and improving economic conditions and convenience and so forth, they're doing the opposite. They're capturing the carbon and they're storing it underground for unclear purposes just so it doesn't get released into the atmosphere.
Yeah.
All in the service of this insane ideology of anthropogenic, it's pseudoscience, anthropogenic global warming. And, you know, they're not going to stop until someone stops them.
Yeah.
And now the Midwestern farmers are finding out just how consequential this stuff is.
This is yet another example of what happens when, like you had hinted at, we fail to pay attention to these trends, to these crazies who are building power. And obviously now they have enough power and they've captured, or however you want to look at it, they have government support, and everyone who's had their hand in the sand, everyone who, you know, who doesn't like politics, who doesn't like news or whatever, is now being confronted with the reality of what happens when you ignore this.
Well, and we mustn't understate the damage that the so-called Green Gestapo has already inflicted on many foreign countries. Exhibit one, a country that I'm very familiar with because I lived there for a time, is Sri Lanka. Sri Lanka's economy and society and government are
failed.
In a shambles, and that's saying something for Sri Lanka, okay, even relative to what went before. And why? The major cause is because their government sort of cottoned onto this idea of producing all organic, using organic fertilizer.
Yeah.
And they banned all the usual.
Well, I don't know if there's a form of organic, or, but basically going organic.
Yeah, going completely organic, and it completely caused the following year, you know, the rice crop, all the other crops to drop by, you know, by 50%.
Yeah.
They lost all those exports. The economy crashed as a result. And that's just one example. And there's still, you know, my friends from Sri Lanka inform me that things are still very bad there.
Yeah. And like you said, that's saying a lot for Sri Lanka.
And that's just one example. I mean, if we go around and look at...
We reported all that in Belgium and the Netherlands.
Sure. The Netherlands, one of Europe's most prosperous countries, and once upon a time, one of the world's freest and most successful republics. Ask them how it's going.
Yes. Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
all that farmers' protest stuff is going to come to naught because they're finding that the whole might of the European Union and the global establishment behind it is arrayed against them and determined to have its way.
The machine is already up now. So by the time you wake up, apparently you got a heck of a fight on your hands.
As I just say, this is why we at the New American try to cover events like these annual COP conferences. Last year we had people at the COP27 conference. And again, it seems very boring and humdrum compared to some of the other things that happen. But this stuff is important. And it is having real consequences right now, and not just in countries on the other side of the ocean. It's happening here.
It's why we covered the summit in Rio de Janeiro in 1992.
Sure.
And we have been raising the alarm bells ever since. Thank you, Steve. And that's all for our news segment today. For more truth behind the news, make sure you get a subscription to the New American Magazine so you know what's coming, just like we described. You can do so online at thenewamerican.com, or you can call our office at 800-727-8783, Monday through Friday from 8 to 5 Central Time. And stay tuned, because after this, I'll be talking to Selwyn Duke about the damage that entertainment has done to men. We will be right back.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The Declaration of Independence proclaims God-given rights, and we intend to protect them. Working with people like you for over 50 years, preserving freedom and building a better tomorrow. Safeguarding the Constitution by limiting government power. We are restoring liberties, educating voters, and leading the freedom movement. Join with us. United, we will defend our rights. We are all Americans. We are the John Birch Society.
What is a man supposed to be like? Last week, TNA contributors Selwyn Duke and I discussed the destructive influence that entertainment has had on morality. Today, Selwyn and I are going to talk about entertainment's toxic portrayal of manhood. Welcome, Selwyn.
Hey, great to be with you, Paul.
Oh, yeah. Always a pleasure, and we love having you on. So, man, off the top of your head, what do you think is one of the worst portrayals? I know that's a big question, but one of the worst portrayals of manhood or of a man that in entertainment?
Well, that takes in a lot of territory, as you know, Paul, so it's hard to say that definitively. What comes to mind for me is the Hal character on Malcolm in the Middle, because really he's portrayed like an overgrown adolescent himself, and that's the norm nowadays. Then I guess I would also mention this movie that was made for television, 1999, The Last Man on Earth. And it's about this future world where all the men have died off due to war because they used some kind of weapon that targeted the Y chromosome. And of course, it's filled with feminist material, feminist messages, and men are portrayed in a very, very negative light, as if the world would be better off without them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's interesting that you bring that up, because I think part of the problem is, and I'm pretty sure that various studies back this up, is part of the problem is that men are not behaving like men, and that's why the world is in the shape that it is. What do you think of that?
Well, I think you're absolutely correct. I mean, obviously, men have to step up to the plate and perform their role, otherwise civilization collapses. Someone years ago put it very, very well. He said that Women devise the domestic order, men devise the civic order, and that's the way it's always been. And when men recede from that role, well, then problems ensue. And what you see nowadays is that boys are raised not really knowing what their role is anymore. And that has to do mainly with feminism, confusing people about the natures of the sexes, how they're different, what their roles actually are. When you tell boys growing up, and this has abated a little bit with the must men, in other words, the transgender men entering women's sports, because now even many feminists have had to admit that the sexes are inherently different and that men have certain advantages in certain dimensions. But when you raise boys telling them, oh, the girls are the same as you are, they can do whatever you can do, what happens, I think, Paul, is that the boys start to tune out, because basically now they're being told, you don't have any special role to fulfill. That's very damaging, because then they don't step up to the plate and they don't have that meaning in life that everyone needs. Everyone needs meaning in life. Professor Jordan Peterson has talked about this. Others have that without meaning, people are just adrift and they go down very, very dangerous and dark roads, substance abuse, criminality, what have you.
Yeah. Well, in entertainment, it seems like when it comes to that is that the girls are smarter and apparently they're just as tough. So, you know, you go back now. And so the boys and the men growing up, imagine seeing that and not knowing, you know, the history of manhood, the rich history and, you know, what we've done for. And I hope, you know, we're diving in some choppy waters here. I get it. This could get us in trouble, but this is the truth. I remember my son once, maybe months ago, he said that, you know, at some point he used to think that girls were smarter than boys. And I can't imagine that entertainment has not had that sort of impact, because again, with character, you see the girls are the studious ones and the wives always know what's going on and the men are walking around like bumbling buffoons. And if it weren't for the wives and their daughters keeping them on track, they'd be bumping into the walls and blowing up. Like even with Tim the Toolman Taylor, right? Like Tim Allen's not like, he's not a feminist, but even that character, you know, if it weren't for his wife keeping him in check, he'd blow up the whole house, you know, with his projects.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, gone are the days when we had shows from the 50s like Father Knows Best and the title says it all. But even back then, you could see the weak man portrayed. I mean, consider The Honeymooners, which I love, by the way, classic show. But nonetheless, the main characters, Ralph Cramden and Ed Norton, were portrayed as being completely henpecked. And that has been the norm for a very long time. And you know what occurs to me here based on what you just said, Paul? We'll hear from the left especially how bad stereotyping is. Oh, you couldn't have Amos and Andy on TV. That was on TV in the 50s because it portrayed black stereotypes and that was destructive. But then they stereotype men in all of these highly negative ways and they don't think twice about it. And that has to make you wonder, what's really behind this? Is it just a desire to entertain, or is there hostility behind this? Because it is very, very destructive. And look, I don't mind some humor, some joking around, but as I think you indicated, when you have this constant drumbeat where men are ever and always portrayed as being bumbling, as being ridiculous, it's very, very destructive. And by the way, I'll point something out here. You said your son used to think that girls were smarter than boys. If you want to talk about the statistics on this, the science, just in terms of IQ, at very young ages, girls actually do have higher IQs, but that changes during adolescence, and then men end up having higher IQs than women. I know a lot of people don't want to hear that. The difference is usually 3 to 5 points. Historically, that's been how it is. But that's not even the point. I just thought I'd mention that.
Yeah.
But yes, the stereotyping is destructive. And one more thing, and I'll let you get in here. I'm sorry about that.
No, it's okay. Go on.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, women obviously want to end up having good husbands. I'm not going to say partners like it's a business arrangement. Good husbands. How are they going to have good husbands if we keep on inculcating boys with these ridiculous ideas about manhood? You know, we're stunting their moral, intellectual, emotional, and spiritual development, where they end up being adolescents, as I put it in an article recently, and there are female adolescents too, you know, a combination of adult and adolescent. And then you just end up with these overgrown children. And that's what we have nowadays.
Yeah, and that's a good point. And that's responsible for a lot of the crime. Again, statistics show that most, I don't know if it's somewhere between 70 and 85%, something like that, most of the men in jail grew up in a home without a father. And that is so, it's the indications are so clear. Obviously, the problem is when men do not have good men as role models or any men at all, they become destructive. And yet they continue to perpetuate this. You know, when you study the projects and things like that, that they put out there, that government funds, you keep and you hear the rhetoric. The answer is always something that's not going to work. More programs here and there, anti-poverty, anti-crime. But none of them say what the answer is. And the answer is you need a family that's, you know, that's a full family, a mother and father, and led by, you know, a strong man and obviously strong women too. And also going back to the IQ thing, one of the things I did tell my son is it's like, look, you know, I didn't really want to tell him that history apparently shows that, you know, men have been, they've obviously dominated. They've dominated science. They've dominated the arts. They've dominated every aspect. But, you know, there is that aspect, and it's a true one, is that they've also managed to push women down and suppress them. So that's been true, too. But what I tell them is we are individualists. Okay, so we don't look at groupings, you know. It's like someone, you know, I tell them, it's like, you're smart, and you're probably smarter than most people, including girls, but that's not to say, but it's certainly not true that in general men are dumber than girls. It's if any stereotype would be true, it'd be the opposite. But, you know, as individualists, we look at individuals.
Right. Let me just add to that, though, because this is something that's been a problem I've delved into for years. Yes, you have to judge every individual as an individual, Paul, but you also have to judge every individual group as an individual group if you want to understand reality in its totality. Remember, how is it that we can even speak of groups? Because they're inherently different. If they weren't, or at least they're different in practice. If they weren't, we couldn't identify them as groups. So when you speak of groups, you're already tacitly acknowledging that there are characteristic differences. But it's interesting what you said about how boys need a good male role model. Absolutely true. Very interesting story relating to this. Years ago, I think it was in South Africa, Paul, they found that animals, large animals, I think, even such as rhinos,
elephants,
were turning up dead.
Elephants.
Yes.
Go on.
Yeah. They found out that the culprits were adolescent male elephants that all of a sudden were behaving very, very differently. And they were trying to figure out why was this. Then they realized they had taken the mature bull elephants out of the herds in that area. Okay. And they figured, well, these young male elephants don't have male role models. So they reintroduced the bulls. What happened was the younger males started following them around. And I think, as the article put it, learned, quote, proper elephant behavior. Now, you have to be careful about extrapolating things from the animal kingdom to humans, because humans are more than mere animals. But nonetheless, I think it applies here. It's absolutely very important for boys to have that, especially girls, too. They also need a good male role model, but boys especially. And the sexes are inherently different. That's an understanding we have to get back to. And something occurs to me here. We're talking about entertainment. Well, I mentioned last week on the show The Rifleman, how the main character, Lucas McCain, was such a great example of virtue. Well, there's a scene in that show, Paul, that I never forgot, and it was this. Lucas McCain was there standing next to this woman, a regular character, Hattie, who I think was a shop owner, an older lady, probably a widow. And he was pondering doing something dangerous. He was going to have to. It was his duty. And he was also a single father with a son. And Hattie wasn't happy about it. She said, oh, you talk to me about principles, because he said he was going to do it out of principle. Well, I'm a woman. Don't talk to me about principles. Principles never tucked in a boy in bed at night. Principles never fed him dinner. And she went on in that vein. And he stopped her with one line. He said, yes, but principles are the only things that make a boy into a man. And I said, wow. You would never see that on a show today, because that was such a pure distillation of truth. That reflects one of the inherent differences between the sexes. You could say that girls become women, but in a way, boys learn to become men, because to a great degree, it's a very intellectual thing where they must be inculcated with the proper principles. And that's not happening today. And of course, one way in which it happens is by their having a good male role model. But boy, you wouldn't see a scene like that in a show today, would you?
Yeah, It's sad that I think you're right on that. I remember I was listening to a sermon years ago, and it was by a pastor who was considered, you know, today he would be considered, you know, toxic, happened to, you know, to be masculinely toxic or whatever the term is.
Toxic and, masculinity.
Yeah, yeah. But one of the things that he said that really always rung out is he was based in Seattle. And so he was really driven to help men grow up and to be a role model and to help young men understand what it is to be a man. And one of the things that he said is one of the most important aspects of being a man is responsibility. And it sounds like such a, it doesn't sound flashy, right? It's not like working out and whatever. And I think those are wrong anyway. Those aren't necessarily the best portrayal anyway. It's responsibility. And he said that because we have that problem today, right? I believe that's what we have. It's like men grow up and males and they grow up and they don't understand what it is to be responsible, to be responsible for their actions. And then if they have a child, to be responsible for that. If they have a family, to provide and be responsible for that. So I found that very, I wouldn't say enlightening, but it seemed so simple, like it was almost not worth saying, but yet it seems like that's what we need most right now, or at least one of the things that men have to understand to become responsible, to not be entitled, to be responsible for their actions, their thoughts, and then their families.
Right. Well, this relates actually to what I just said, and that's why I said it. You have to remember, I was talking about the inherent differences between boys and girls, how boys learn to become men. What I mean is girls are more emotion-oriented. Boys are more intellect or logic-oriented. I know the feminists don't like the way that sounds, but truth is truth, and facts don't care about your feelings. And my point here is that boys tend to a great degree to respond to duty. You say, this is your duty. This is the plate you have to step up to. And it's very important to emphasize that. Why was it, Paul, that so many young men actually volunteered for the military during World War II, volunteered to perhaps bleed and suffer and die? It's because they had this mentality, this is my duty.
Right.
Women, on the other hand, girls, they respond to the imperatives of motherhood more out of emotion. I'm not saying it's bad, it's wonderful, I'm just saying it's different. And when we lose sight of these inherent differences between the sexes, we can't possibly know how we're supposed to raise boys and girls. And if we don't know how to raise them, we raise them incorrectly. We end up with bad mothers and fathers, and then society collapses. It's really as simple as A to B.
Yeah, and we're seeing part of that. I guess I'd finish up with this, is that God's design for a family includes specific models for men and for women. And when they both operate according to God's design, that's when society is robust and healthy. And obviously, you know, we live today, and it's not attacking just men, it's attacking women. For whatever reason, society's telling women that, you know, to be a woman, you need to be like a man, which is another crazy thing. I don't know. Maybe we'll talk about it next time. Any last thoughts, Selwyn?
Yeah, no, I just endorse everything that you said. I mean, obviously, the man is the head, the woman is the heart. They have different roles. If God wanted there to just be everyone the same, then he would have just made one sex. We'd be asexual creatures, but we're not. There's a sexual binary in humanity for good reason, and it's ordained by God. And even if you look at it from an evolutionary fashion, which I don't, you can see it makes absolute sense, because then we, quote, evolve this way for a reason, or at least we have become this way. It's sexual dimorphism, and you can't fight it.
Absolutely. But I agree. I think God knows what he's doing, and he created man and woman in his image. And when we function the way we're supposed to, things are beautiful. When not, we got what we got today. Thanks, Selwyn, and we'll have you back next week, sir.
Thank you, and God bless, Paul.
God bless.
Imprisonment, forced labor, permanent separation from my family, perhaps death. I knew what could happen to people who were caught trying to defect. But the watchtowers stood yards away. The possibility of a new life in a different world, one without tyranny, was within sight. The West. I thought of the rewards no longer crushed under the boot of communism. I would work and make money, no longer restrained by the chains of collectivism. I would say what I wanted, without fear of spies and informants nearby. I would be free. The frozen rain and Romanian mud seeped through my gloves and cloths. I fantasized about a fire burning in the wood stove of my parents' home, but I pushed those thoughts from my mind, closed my eyes, and waited for the cover of the darkness.
Get Defector, a true story of tyranny, liberty, and purpose by Mark Hobovkovich with Paul Dragoo, a thrilling page-turner that will remind you how precious yet vulnerable freedom is. Available at shopjbs.org or Amazon. For a limited time, get 20% off your entire order using promo code DEFECTOR20 when you purchase Defector at shopjbs.org.
To cap off today's show, we'll now go to two members of the John Birch Society's research and legislative team who will discuss another important legislative matter. Tune in.
This is Christian Gomez for The New American. Today we'll be discussing gun control legislation being proposed out of Congress. And joining us here to discuss those various bills and why we should stop them is Peter Rakowski, our research associate. Peter, thank you so much for joining us again.
Thanks for having me on, Christian.
So, as I just mentioned, there's various bills that have been introduced in the current Congress that if any of those were passed, it could spell the, it could spell not the end, but major restrictions on our God-given Second Amendment rights to defend ourselves. So can you tell us about some of these bills and what people can do to avert their passage?
Right, yeah. There are a lot of bills that are introduced in Congress right now that would impose even worse gun controls than we already have, you know, as if the ones that we have are not bad enough already. But there are several ones. I'll go through them. One is H.R. 698, which is titled the Assault Weapons Ban, which would ban so-called assault weapons, you know, anything that the left claims is an assault rifle, anything semi-automatic, and a whole slew of other bills or firearms. Banning a huge amount of, people's, firearms, taking away a big portion of their ability to defend themselves. So that's a huge one that the left is pushing for. Another one is H.R. 768, the Extreme Risk Protection Order Expansion Act, which is a complicated title, but what really is a red flag law, a national red flag law, which is unconstitutional both, not only the Second Amendment, but also the Fourth Amendment. And essentially it would allow the federal government to confiscate anyone's firearms if that person is labeled dangerous by the government. So if the government says that you or I are dangerous threats, they can take away our firearms, and they wouldn't even have to go before a court or get a warrant. They could just declare it and then take away our weapons.
And when they say dangerous, the common sense thought would be, oh, perhaps someone who's committed murder, someone some heinous criminal of the type you expect to see currently incarcerated in prison, who's committed like manslaughter or something. But no, just look at January 6th, for example. Individuals with extreme political views. Of course, there was the MIAC report from over a decade ago that labeled people who were supporters of Ron Paul in his presidential campaign, members of the Constitution Party, libertarians, people of our paleo-conservative philosophy, so to speak, as being threats to national homeland security. So any one of us, like you said, it would not be a stretch that we could find patriots listed as dangerous, and thus, with that label, then say, oh, you can't own a firearm because you are a danger to the community.
Right, and also, also the left is using psychology, so they can get some doctor and say, we've done some psychological tests and we've determined you're, not of right mind psychologically. And because of that, we're going to confiscate your firearms. And what would not of right mind mean? Well, being conservative or
even being a Christian. Of course, in the Soviet Union, Christians were declared being mentally unfit, people who believe in this God that you can't see, and you pray to them and God answers your prayers. Clearly, you're crazy. And people like that were put in actual psych wards throughout the Soviet Union and even in the communist bloc countries. Even look at Richard Wurmbrand, the famous Lutheran pastor, and his wife, Sabina Wurmbrand. They were incarcerated for being Christians of conviction in Romania. So That can happen here in the United States. So this is a very dangerous bill because we don't want the government defining what is mentally unfit and who is dangerous, and then to use that as an excuse to withdraw firearms. So that's a very scary bill. It opens the door to far more gun controls. What are some of the other bills that you're also tracking in Congress?
Yeah, so the H.R. 715, the Bipartisan Background Checks Act. So nationwide universal background checks, as if we don't already have draconian federal background checks. But it would make it even worse. So, even if it's private transfers between two private individuals, let's say a friend or, a family member, they would need to get background checks just to, give the firearm to someone else. And that's really dangerous because, number one, citizens, they would need the government's permission effectively to own or to buy a gun. And if you need the government's permission, it's not really a right. It's really a government-issued privilege that the government can withdraw. And then also background checks, by default, they would require like a national gun registry because the government would know.
And they're not free either.
Right.
You usually have to pay a fee for those kind of things. So if let's say, like you mentioned, inheritance, a grandfather has a collection of firearms, antique, some that aren't so antique, whatever. He has his collection. He wants to pass it down to his children or his grandchildren. And then you have to get background checks on all of them, the fees involved, the time involved in that. And if something comes up that's a red flag, there goes your ability to pass on your private property to your own family.
Yeah, and if any red flag comes up, the government will just confiscate it. So, any antique weapon or anything of value, the government will just take away and you'll never see it again.
Yeah.
So that's what background checks really means. H.R. 625 is one of the worst bill titles, right up there with the Inflation Reduction Act, or the Affordable Health Care Act. The Keep American Safe Act, which would ban any type of magazines 15 rounds or more.
They should rename it the Disarm Americans or Make Americans Safeless Act, really, is what that is. Because if you can't have magazines to 15 rounds of ammunition or and so forth, that restricts your ability to be able to reload and fire as many shots as would be needed.
Right.
Could you imagine if this law was in place in, say, Ukraine? How would the Ukrainian people defend themselves against whatever threats they're facing? So, and they want to do that here in the U.S. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and even here, it's oftentimes you need to fire multiple rounds in case there's a home intruder or something like that going on. So, more than 15 rounds, it is needed, and this is just a way that the left can incrementally take away, our God-given right to keep and bear arms.
Absolutely.
So there's H.R. 660 as well, which is just called Ethan's Law, which would essentially regulate what we do in our own houses. So, another major form of government overreach. The left will complain about how, in some conservative states, how the government will, regulate people's bedrooms. Well, this bill does just that. So, it would require, any American, if they have kids in the house, it would tell them how they need to store their weapons. Inside the house, if the gun doesn't even leave the house, there will be government mandates how the gun can be stored. And if, the government goes into the house and sees the gun isn't stored the way the government wants it stored.
This is a massive expansion of federal power entering a person's private home.
Exactly. Yeah, and then H.R. 2392, the Pause for Gun Safety Act, another silly name, which would mandate a 7-day waiting period. So, another way to make it much more difficult to purchase.
Inconvenience. Disincentivize people from wanting to go through the process. So we're really running out of time. So do we have legislative alerts for each of these, or how can people, what's the best way for people that are watching to quickly contact their members of Congress to oppose all of these terrible bills?
Yes, we have a single legislative alert at the federal level for all of these bills, all in one, because really these bills are just different ways that the left is...
What's that alert titled and how can people find it?
Yeah, it's titled Stop Extreme Gun Control Bills. And if you go to jbs.org/alerts and then click on the federal alerts button, you'll see that alert pretty close to the top. Mm-hmm. So that's how anyone can find this alert.
So click on that, and you could read the details and then send a pre-written message that hopefully people will edit and put in their own words.
Right, yeah. So we encourage everyone to use that alert and to contact their congressman.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your time, Peter. So if you're watching, do what Peter said. Again, jbs.org/alerts, federal alerts, and find that alert. Click it, and also then share it on social media and with your friends. Email them. Tell them about these horrible bills that are in Congress. So thank you so much, and God bless.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of The New American TV. And don't forget to visit betterwayconference.org to get tickets to this great event. In the meantime, visit thenewamerican.com for more truth behind the news. And we'll see you tomorrow, Lord willing.
As a lumberjack, I've been cutting wood for decades. My job is pretty straightforward. I see the wood, I chop the wood. My axe goes through every time. You remember when everyone bought all the toilet paper? And they wanted me to wear these things? And someone invested a lot of money into this stuff. They say I'm part of a global plan. I don't think so. It's too hot, it's too cold. You know what? The weather changes. We even hear crazy ideas on how kids should learn.
Here's the news, Dad.
Is it, son? Is it?
What about this one, Dad?
Nope. It's hard to tell what's real and what's fake these days. There's just too much baloney out there. At The New American, they cut through the baloney and give me the truth.
Visit thenewamerican.com and subscribe to get 50% off the cover price. And if you want an even better deal, use the promo code 10OFFSUB. Again, that's 10OFFSUB for more than 50% off.